When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Shift and Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt D'Andrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hello, welcome to Shift and Steer. What's up?
Already?
Pal. we're a pal down.
We're a pal down.
Brad's out. He's taking care of some family business still. As you guys know, you're on the show. You listen to the show. You know what's going on. Brad's mom passed away a couple of months ago, and we've heard the stories and stuff about her. But there's obviously a lot that has to work that has to be done afterward. And
only imagine.
And he's got all that. So he's got a lot of that on his plate. But I'm here. Aaron's here.
Yep.
You're not in Tahoe.
No, I was yesterday. I was last night. I was last night till about 7 o'clock. And then I said, you know what? I'm just going to drive down and drop off a car at Dad's warehouse so I can have more room to move. So I rolled in here. I don't know, like almost midnight, a dumb move. And the Mini got damaged in the trailer. Oh, you know, there's so much road work. It's horrible, man. There's just so much road work in California right now. It's just devastating. And I just hit some of that road work and somebody pulled out in front of me and I had to slam on the brakes and the trailer locked up. And, you know, just anyway, a strap came loose on the Mini. A piece actually broke that it was strapped to, and it got loose in there and it slammed into the back door. So it put a pretty substantial dent in the trunk and the bumper and the quarter panel. Yeah, it's going to, yeah. I don't know that I can repair it. I think I could maybe pull it the way it came, but I'm really, really bummed. And that's the 1960. That's the little jewel, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little race car. It has some bumps and bruises, but this is a big one and it was unnecessary. You know,
we had something similar. Adam Carolla had something similar. We bought one of Pete Brock's BRE 510s. It's the yellow car, which was like the Jamaican, like independent team that was raced. And Pete designed the yellow and white graphics. And, you know, this was a deal on a car. It was the shell of a car. It was all taken apart. Somebody was trying to restore it. They just couldn't do it. No time, no money, whatever. You know, the engine was at an engine builder. So it was basically the unibody on a rotisserie. And the rotisserie got loaded into a trailer and tied down. And when it got delivered to us, Sean pulled it out and he's like, why is the rear quarter panel all smashed? And it came loose and it was just flopping around in the trailer. Yeah. Like basically it's on a rotisserie on wheels. So imagine you see the videos of a trailer when it's not weighted properly and it's fishtailing.
Right. Yeah.
Well, imagine the trailer going straight, but the rotisserie in it was fishtailing. It was tied down in the front, but not in the back. And it's just smack in the back of the thing. So Sean pulls it out. He's like, what did you pay for this fucking thing? And Adam's like, a lot. He's like, oh, we got a lot of work to do. So it took a month of body work and stuff. And it's not, you know, it's like, and you mentioned the back of your car too. Not an easy spot. If it was a front fender, you go like, I'm going to take the fender off, or I can cut a fender and do another one or something. And it's like, but now it's fixed part of the unibody, and it just like kind of has, it just kind of has to be done there, like on it. And
That's how this is too. It's the whole right rear bumper quarter on the inside of the taillight, the whole trunk lid. The trunk lid's pretty substantial on these vintage minis. And I can't believe I have a rear fog light on the bumper. I mean, on the trunk, and it pushed that in. I can't believe it didn't break that glass, because it's like a dome glass. You know the kind that had the little point on them? You know, they have a little ridge line, and then they have the point. It's one of those, and it stands off, you know, 8 inches from the dang, you know, trunk. But it hit that. But I have a feeling it just kept, like you said, just kept hammering it. You know, every time I stop or go, it just bang, 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 bang. And so it's going to be fun. I mean, it's repairable. You know, the minis are old, thin metal. I'm sure I can just warm it up with a hairdryer and push it with my elbow.
Push it back in. Yeah. I did that on the bumper cover of a car the other day, on Tammy's car. Somebody backed into her. And I got underneath there. I couldn't reach it very well, but I got underneath there with like a pry bar, like the back of a hammer or something, and the heat gun, and just popped it out. And now it just looks kind of wavy and weird, but it was not completely dented. She's like, it's good enough. I was like, all right, it's fine. I wouldn't drive it, but it's fine. Well, unfortunately for now, because of all the stuff coming up, that you're going to have to just put the car away for a little bit.
Yeah. I didn't even touch it. I literally just turned the battery off. I disconnect the battery and just parked it and walked away. I didn't even take the cover off and bang it with my fist or not. Just walked away. Time for another day.
And unfortunately, now we don't want anything bad to happen, but if you go and start moving everything you own, there's going to be some casualties in artwork and whatever. So
I know.
Start thinking about a few more boxes, a little bit more foam.
I've been saving foam. I've been saving boxes. I've got some stuff.
It's definitely worth thinking about. And moving, like, we've moved garages. I moved my garage. Adam's moved his warehouses and his garage, and he's still got stuff all jam packed into one building that was before, you know, two buildings. So, you know, it's tough to even walk through, and you're bumping into stuff, and it just. We're all just kind of looking for a little bit of a break to get our heads above water and get things organized.
We're slaves to stuff, man. I don't want so much of this stuff. It's like people come by the shop, hey, you want anything?
Yeah.
How about this?
Sell.
Oh, you can use this.
Just start selling stuff. Just start selling stuff.
Oh, I'm trying. I sold the Ducati and I sold one of the Porsches, but nobody has come forward on anything else. And I've checked the market. They're not overpriced. It's just, you know, the market's funny right now because I have funny things, and I guess they're a little quirky.
I mean, look, still, like, we're still in this inflation period, and obviously we're all nervous about money. And in California, gas is a fortune.
Oh my God.
Like,
that's like nuts right now.
I mean, you try to fill up something big, like a truck, and you're like, I got to fill it up three times just because my credit card keeps getting dinged, or the ATM, or whatever, you know, and you're like, it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah. It used to be $60. Now I'm pushing over 100 just to put regular gas in the Jeep. And, you know, I'm making all these trips and I'm filling up twice a day. And I'm like, geez, it's cost me $400 to go round trip right now. It's like, are you serious? Yeah. And diesel prices, they're more than premium now.
Yeah, that I don't even understand.
No, it's wrong.
I don't
wrong.
Really get it. It's like junk gas. It's the crap left over.
So yeah.
I don't know why it's...
it's a byproduct. Yeah. Hey, this byproduct's valuable.
Yeah.
Let's check up the price.
It's the heir of the spare, right? The diesel's Prince Harry of fuel. Is that mean? I don't know if that's mean, but Well, speaking of gas costs and road costs and road trips, I went up to Rennsport.
I'm sorry I missed that.
I borrowed a press car, got into a Volvo S90 T8 Recharge.
I'm gonna have to look at those because
that's a handful. But
Volvo's got some badass cars.
I'm still. I know I've said this before. I think this is the underrated car brand. I think they have great design.
Yeah, they really do.
The S90 is their full size sedan. The Recharge is a plug in hybrid. So it still has their little four cylinder. I think it's the 2 liter four cylinder. Yeah, okay. It puts out 300 and something horsepower, 313 or 340 or something, 330 or something like that. But then combined with the electric motors, it's 455 horsepower combined.
Wow.
It's quick. When you have the electric motors going and the gas engine, you know, 0 to 60 in 4.6 seconds for a full size sedan, that's, you know, 4,600 plus pounds. The combined fuel economy is the 66 MPGE, as we call it. I thought it did well. The car is quick on just the electric motor. So what happens is some of these plug-in hybrids, you're like, oh, I can go 38 miles is what this one's rated. It says 38 miles on just the battery. But it's basically a two-wheel drive car at that point, because it's all-wheel drive, but without a drive shaft. It's what we basically say electronic four-wheel drive.
Right, yeah.
Because of the electric motor.
Kind of the new thing, yeah.
So the electric motors scoot the car around, and it moves it pretty quickly and at fairly high speeds without having to need the gas engine. So if you charge it, you can drive around town and not really use the gas engine much or at all. It doesn't necessarily need the gas engine to move the car around at a reasonable speed.
Now, is it a plug-in hybrid?
It is a plug-in hybrid. Okay. Yeah, it is a plug-in hybrid. So I did plug it in a few times. I plugged it into one public charger, which is 240, but fairly slow. And then I plugged it in at my warehouse into the normal 110 outlet, because that's the plug that came with it, which is interesting because for my Ford Lightning, I have like whatever the three prong plug. It's the you know, bigger amperage, and the Volvo doesn't accept that plug. It takes the normal, and I don't know the names of all these things, and I should at this point, I apologize, but it takes the normal single round plug that is on the public network. It doesn't accept a supercharger, if you will. It doesn't accept like a big, you know, 150 amp, whatever. It doesn't take that. So I don't really know why, but maybe because of the size of the battery, maybe it should be too much because the battery's not that big.
Interesting.
But that being said, it's a lovely car. The design is fantastic. The interior was very nice. The seats are fantastic. The massaging seat function, super useful on the nice long drive up there.
Oh, yeah,
some of them are a little weak. This one did a pretty good job. I lean the seat back a little bit so I could put a little more weight onto my back, and I hit that massage and I was like, it's not terrible. You know, that's for sure.
You're like, where are the raccoons doing all the work?
Yeah. it has the air, like an air ride suspension in it. And one of the things that I noticed on a bunch of cars, and I know this has come up before, but when you switch from, like, you're listening to the radio or you're listening to satellite radio, Sirius XM, and then you switch over to CarPlay, you know, for your navigation, or you get a text message or something. I still don't get why we don't have enough vehicles doing the split screen. And what happens is you switch over to CarPlay, you're looking at your map, and you can change the radio stations, I guess, like with your steering wheel controls, but you really can't see your presets and kind of see what the radio and see what's kind of going on. So you kind of get one or the other. I think the Ram, like the truck, has enough screen real estate. The screen's big enough that you can split screen. You can literally see all of your radio presets and your CarPlay map. But most cars don't do that.
Really? Yeah.
Most cars don't do that. And they're trying to do some things like put the CarPlay directions on the gauge cluster in front of you. So like the Volvo has the gauge cluster, and to the right and the left are the digital round gauges for, you know, RPM and speed. And in the middle is like Google Maps or something, and it can give you directions. And my Ford Lightning kind of does the same thing. If I'm in radio mode, but my phone's connected and it's doing CarPlay in front of me, I get sort of a version of in the gauge cluster, sort of a version of the navigation. I'll say turn right, turn whatever, but you don't get a lot of the preview and you see like three lights ahead. And even though I have a large vertical screen in my truck, it doesn't allow me to split screen. It doesn't allow me to have like even three or four or five presets from the radio while I'm in the CarPlay mode. And maybe it's going to be a software update, or maybe it's happened and I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, it's just kind of a weird thing. Like, why can't
I would think that would be a software thing and definitely not a hardware thing.
But yeah. It's a software thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Our Porsche has a gauge indicator and a split screen. My Jeep has a split screen. Yeah, and that's pretty much the only new cars we have. But
yeah,
they both have split screens. So I guess I never realized there are some that aren't or don't have split screens.
Yeah, if you're trying to use like
get a different car,
like Waze or Apple Maps, and you're looking at the map on the screen, then most of your car's infotainment controls have disappeared, and you have to go back to it, which is, I don't know, it's just kind of interesting. But that being said, I like the Volvo a lot. I think, again, it's an underappreciated brand. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in the EV space. The EX60, I think, is the small
one,
but they're a three-row SUV. And there's a bit of a crossover here between the Volvo brand and Polestar, which is the all-electric brand, right? They're owned by the same parent company. They share a lot of tech. They will probably compete. You know, they'll both have a three-row SUV, and it'll be a shared platform. But it'll be a little different. Like, that's not that uncommon. We see it with, like, Kia, Hyundai, Genesis, right? You know, you're going to see you see crossover with Ford and Lincoln and so on and so forth. Honestly, look at the Volkswagen group between VW, Audi, Porsche, you know, like they all got SUVs based off of like a Cayenne platform or the Macan platform, whatever the internal name for it is. So it'd be kind of interesting. I like the car a lot. They did a nice job on it. It's definitely something I would consider. And I think they nailed the design. I think their SUVs and their cars all look sharp. I think they've got a pretty nice, mature, but nice design.
Yeah, definitely. I was at the mall the other day with my brother, and we walked past the Polestar showroom there. And boy, they're that's a good looking vehicle. I looked in the window. Nice. I'm like, you know, the interiors are actually not so vanilla, because, you know, Volvo always had some pretty basic interiors, kind of nonchalant, and that little the little waterfall center console I was never a fan of. But the new generation of them, really, there's some good lines, some great designs. They look very practical and intuitive, but also cool, you know, techy, and it's good stuff.
Yeah. I agree. The Volvo, by the way, the EX30 is the small EV that's coming out soon, and the EX90 is going to be the larger electric SUV that's coming out. By the way, Polestar 1, if you remember that was sort of their high-end launch into the car market. It's a two-door sedan, electric, that's a good looking car.
It really is.
That was a sharp looking car.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I was gazing in the window going,
it's a hybrid. I think it's a hybrid, but
I'm telling you, I love the hybrid idea. Absolutely love it.
That's an expensive vehicle, but that was a sharp looking vehicle. And that was pretty nice to drive. I think they only made 1,500 of them.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, that was kind of cool.
Good stuff.
It's a Rennsport. And I was a little disappointed. It was all Porsches.
Oh, yeah.
it was a fantastic event. I think they came in at something like 90,000 people over the 4 days. It was, it didn't feel too busy, but it was well attended. It was well curated. Porsche had a couple of, announcements and stuff that were going on there. The vintage racing, the Porsche Cup Series was all happening there. Adam Carolla was invited to display his 935. So we sent that car up there. It was a great location. It was right by the merch line. That was 2 hours in line every day. That was the one thing people were complaining about. It was like, they need like four merch booths instead of one. The line was ridiculous every day from the morning to night. Like, it was insane.
Wow.
Porsche's hospitality suite was nice. They had a stage set up there. They had some music acts and the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, wow.
Doobie Brothers with Michael Madonna, by the way. So just to make it clear, everyone's like, he's not going to show up. He's not going to show up. And I was like, he showed up. Wow. Right there. All of that was great. We saw Patrick Dempsey up there, Jerry Seinfeld up there. We saw the great Dave Merrick.
He was
up there. Dave, we got to hang out with him for a while, and
I miss Dave.
And he, you know, like, you walk around with him and you're like, oh, look at this car. Look at the livery on this car and look at the thing on that car. And he's got some story. He was like, yeah, I contributed to that. Like, I sketched that out, or I did this on a plane from Japan and I went over and I painted that, or I did the template for that. I was just like, everything crazy. Cool. In the design world has his touch on it. If you've noticed that,
it's the Merrick touch.
It kind of does. So kudos to Dave, and he's so much fun to hang out with all the time. So it was great seeing him.
Doodles by Dave.
Yeah, right. And, by the way, not a single Honda or Acura, obviously, there.
Right.
He's got his hands on everything, even outside of the company he works for. But I see the value in him for Honda and Acura. A great designer, a man about town for sure.
Yeah.
And he's not sort of in this bubble of a single brand. Like, he definitely has thoughts and visions of things from other car companies and racing livery, like Ron Capp's Napa funny car, too. We were talking about Adam Carolla's building, and I was like, someday when we get it all cleaned out, we got to lay it out and design it. He's like, yeah, we should send me some pictures of the building. And it's like, I think I could do it in 3D. We could come up with some ideas. And he wants, and then later he came back. He's like, I think I really want to do that building. I was like, all right. Adam's like, fuck yeah, if you want to help me design the building. Good. So now we may be looking at the new car museum designed by Dave Merrick, who, by the way, did a lot at the Lions Museum, the drag race museum.
Oh, he did. Oh,
yeah, he designed that as well.
Oh, wow. Dave, he's just so talented. He's so awesome.
He just doesn't sleep, though. I don't know.
Just the sweetest guy. I know. He just kind of zooms through life, hands on everything.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys. You can see him walking through everything in life, just touching it. Touch. Yeah. He's touch, little scribble.
Yeah.
Got pen in both hands.
You know, and we saw Pete Brock there, and Pete Brock, a designer as well. So those guys get together, and they definitely have thoughts on things. And what's interesting is when you see them both kind of reminisce and go, I think this is the slightly wrong shade of like cream on this car. Like, I remember it differently. And they both still have, now Pete is in his 80s and Dave's significantly younger, but they both have such a keen, like, you know, like a great musician can hear a note and like know what it is. They can see that with color, if I can explain that correctly.
Sure.
They can see it with color and go, that's not exactly the right color.
Yeah.
That I remember it being, in Pete's case, you know, 50 years ago.
Wow.
You know,
the cataracts, Pete. It's a cataract.
You know, it's not like he's whipping out his monocle and his top hat. He's like, oh, let me see. Or the jeweler's eye or something, you know, looking at a watch or a diamond.
Little Pantone flip book.
Yeah. He's not doing that. It's all in his head. So I don't know. And
he's still calibrated.
Yeah, he's definitely dialed in. So Porsche launched this GT3R. This is a track only car.
Right.
They only make a handful of. You can't get it. It's already spoken for. It's about $1 million. Kind of interesting. Like, they did this with the 935 at Rennsport a few years ago. They rebooted the 935.
Right.
And they're like, this is a track only car. It pays homage to the 935 of the 70s. We're going to only do a limited number of them. And I brought up a point to Alistair Weaver from Edmunds, who was also at Rennsport. He was like, every Porsche you can imagine is basically there. I said, except the modern day 935 that they announced a few years ago. I said, if you own that car, what better event on the planet would you like to get some seat time than at Rennsport, even during some parade laps? And I go, did you see a single one of them there? He's like, now that you mentioned it, I didn't see one. I was like, the first Porsche ever was there, you know?
That thing's trippy looking. Yeah.
And not one of those 935s that I saw, and certainly not any on the track, even during parade laps or any sort of exhibition or anything. They built a track car that went to collectors, and they're in garages and they're not being touched. And they just get traded at auction with no miles. So Porsche going, hey, we're doing a track only GT3. It's just a piece. It's an art piece. And I get it. If I was going to collect art and I had the means to do so, I'd be collecting art, you know, cars as art.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, there's a lot of engineering and race capability put into a vehicle that's never going to see pavement. You know, so it's just kind of a interesting thing, but what it does for the brand and the resale value and the collectability of the brand and the reputation of the brand, all is sort of the contributing factor of why you do something like that. And I don't know, but it's interesting that that was another move that they made.
Porsche, I have an idea for you. If you're listening, quit selling cars that work, just sell a shell with just a beautiful body and paint job and, you know, the basics of interior that people can hang on their wall, you know, and leave the ones that work to the people that want to use them properly. Right. Yeah. Just sell the art. Why is it important to sell the art? Right. To just the shell rolling and just, right. Why not?
Maybe they should start doing bodies in white, so we can just kind of paint them and do whatever we want. Everyone becomes an art car, sort of your own version of your Andy Warhol kind of car. It's interesting that you brought that up without even like looking at the notes today. The exploding Porsche on the wall. They're doing something similar, but kind of going in the opposite direction. So Porsche finally launched their bespoke in-house coach builder, if you will. I'm gonna screw up the name, Sonderwunsch.
Oh yeah, that was a tough name. I was like, what?
And it basically means special wish or special request. We've seen this like with Ferrari, a couple of the other brands. Somebody goes, hey, I want a 458 Spider, but I wanted a single seat with a cowl in the back. And you know, 3 years later and a couple million bucks, and you know, Ferrari made this special thing. So
And those are pretty cool.
Yeah. So they launched this new division, and it's going to be anything from paint to sample to some rebodied stuff. There's not a lot you can do with power.
Yeah.
Because they still have rules on creating the car and emissions and all that stuff. And you can bring them your own car. You can bring them.
Yeah, your
previously owned. So you can bring them a 911. You can bring them a Carrera GT and go, you know what I like about the Carrera GT is this and this and this, but I always felt like the headlights were a little dated and, you know, and this and that, you know, I like it more like the Carrera GT concept car that was debuted before the production came out. And now you can go to Porsche and go, we can do that. We can make
that. So they're actually going to do that. Not just customize, you know, interior and color, but they're actually going to massage body lines. Huh?
It seems like that is all potentially on the table. Now it all has to be sort of within reason. And it's not easy. So if they accept,
I only have this hammer. That's it. I only have this hammer.
If, by the way, they want to do everything they can to the car per your request and then deliver it back to you with a new Monroney.
Oh, yeah.
Saying you got a Carrera GT in 2005 or whatever, but now you've got a 2025 Carrera GT from the factory rebuild with a warranty. And they said what they won't cover under warranty is like if you pick, like, for example, on the interior, if you pick some unique material that wouldn't have gone through the durability testing of the
cost,
right? They're not
I want a paper bag interior.
Right. Yeah. Like if you went to them and go, hey, I'm going to make it out of headliner material or handbags. I'm going to go, that's not normally what we do.
Yeah.
Right.
My son's baby blanket.
So just to get them engaged, you drop $100,000. And then for the $100,000, you basically have the team working on your designs and going back with you for a year. And then from there, you could, now they threw out some numbers that'll say things like, for Porsche to develop a unique paint for you, it's about $200,000. And then no one will ever get to use that paint color again. It won't end up in their catalog. If you want a special interior, it's about $50,000. But offline, talking to the Porsche people, they're basically saying it's $100,000 to engage, and it's going to be about $1 million to do your car.
Yeah. And what, the wait list is almost a decade, like eight, 10 years.
That's already, we're 2 weeks after the event or a week after the event. And they said, now, obviously, they've been pitching this to some of their unique customers ahead of time. They said there's an 8-year wait list. So even if they took your $100,000 and start working on your car, whatever the process is, I don't know, but the shit's not going to be done until 8 years. So
I wonder if those people can go broke in the meantime and sell their allocations.
Honestly, that has to be addressed somehow, right? You got to start thinking about
what
are you going to do? a lot can change in 8 years. A lot can change in 1 year, right? So,
as we're seeing.
Interesting, though. It's cool. It's interesting. Yeah, and look, as part of the pitch process, the photo that they were sharing is exactly what you're talking about. It's like a body in white 911, and it has like half of it has like a fender, the other half doesn't, and shows some suspension. And behind it is just like art on the walls of like, here's a wheel, and here's a brake, and here's some color. Yeah. Like, it is exactly what you would want the experience to be. And you could take your car. So honestly, though, I think if you just went in with like a 79 911, pretty basic, you're probably not going to be able to get into this program. I think this program is already, you're going to be competing with, I don't know how to say it correctly, but you're going to be competing with who's willing to cut up the most expensive versions of their car and go down. Like, if you had a, you know, an 81 911, you're at the bottom of the list. But if you walk in there with a Carrera GT and they go, I have some thoughts, you know, like, I never liked the Carrera GT with the top on it, with the little toupee. It's a little too viperish for me. Right. And what if you said, well, let's reconfigure the whole thing. Let's make a Carrera GT coupe, or let's make it.
Let's go to a 918. Just forget about
that. Yeah. Just
go to a 918. Much, much nicer car.
Now, I don't know if they'll go so far as saying, hey, I'm going to take my 935 race car and turn it into a street car. It could be interesting if they do that.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, because they would probably have to remove some roll cage stuff to fit some things in there and do half roll cage. And because those cars are homologated, they're cages, but they're not full tube frame. So you could arguably, you could get a dash in there and you can get some gauges in there and you can get,
except Adam's car, right? Is Adam's car most shells and panels? No.
Yeah, it's not, it's still a 935 tub.
Oh, it is, really?
It's got some stuff welded in it, but the original roll cage in that was aluminum and it was lightweight. We have it and it's assembled. You could pick it up and run around with it. The whole cage.
Wow.
You can run with it. So one of the things that we do, Bruce Kennepa does this for his cars and all of his clients, is he takes out the aluminum thin roll cage, which wouldn't do anything for you anyway. And he puts in a steel roll cage, but his is bolt in like the original.
Oh, okay. See,
it's more up to safety specs, modern things.
Yeah, you'd have to. See, I would have thought that they would have started to cut that tub out and do a front subframe, rear subframe, you know, replacement parts and tube, and then lay body panels over those for the race cars. So that's
so wow. The front and the rear has some welded bars that go to the firewall and bulkhead, basically.
Yeah.
And then, as far as I remember, the rest of the unibody, the cockpit, has a bolt-in
cage. That's cool. Yeah.
I'm sure there's rules around it. And if you remember, they also put there's a hose fitting on the roll cage and they would run oil through it as an oil cooler, by the way, wildly insane. And then Alistair Weaver from Edmonds was talking about, we brought this up on CarCast. I just thought this was a fascinating little tidbit, but I think he was talking to Derek Bell and he was looking at our vintage race car and there was a pressure gauge. And he's like, and Alistair's like, I don't understand this. It says chassis pressure. And he's like, yes. He said they would have a tube frame chassis. Mm-hmm. And then they would put air in it and create some pressure. And at any point during a race, like at Le Mans, if that gauge lost pressure, as the driver, you knew there was a crack or something in your chassis, in your tube frame chassis.
It's from stress.
And he goes, well, what do you do? What does that mean? He goes, nothing. It's a death gauge. It means if you crash, you're going to die because there's chances are there's a crack in your chassis. I go, why would you run with a death gauge? Like, why would you have that? Listen, if you were driving a 24 hour Le Mans and you lost pressure on that gauge, you don't get to come in and go find the crack and weld it. You just keep racing. That's what those guys did. I was like, why would you? He's like, it was completely morbid. It was like, I don't know why we would have it.
So bizarre. Well, the other thing too is depending on how much air pressure you're running, wouldn't that have kind of a bomb effect if on an impact?
Yeah, I don't think it's meant to have a lot of pressure. I think it's meant to be just enough pressure to trigger on the gauge. I don't really know, but they
go 5 PSI.
No, it's like if you think about the bolt-in cage on Adam's car, they would, it's all completely sealed. They would use it as a path for oil. So yes, if you're in an accident, you get hot oil all over you. And
unpleasant.
but if they're going under the same strategy as like, if they built some sort of tube frame chassis or roll cage, it's completely sealed off. They put a pressure gauge. They thread in a pressure gauge and some sort of valve stem attachment to it. And they just, I don't know, they put 20, 30 pounds of pressure in it, you know, just enough to trigger on a gauge. And enough that you, if you lost pressure, you would know, or if it was slowly leaking pressure, you would know, right? If it was
the gauge could be faulty. That's just silly, you know?
But it's like most of the time you just try to ignore
temperature.
The gauge. But I just thought it was a weird thing to put in a car, right? Because especially if you can't do anything about it, you know?
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense at all. Because I pressurized my rock rails on the Defender to hold air. So I can put about 115 PSI in there from my compressor. That's all I can put in there. But in the sun, those things will jump up to about 123, 125 PSI. And when it's really cold, they'll go down to like 108, 110, you know? So I could only imagine, because it gets hot inside of a race car. Like people that don't understand this don't understand. It gets hot inside of a race car. Every piece of metal is under stress and friction and it gets hot. So a roll cage can get hot to the touch.
Well, oh, yeah.
Air
yeah.
pressure would expand like crazy, you know.
You increase. Do it just to bring air with you in case you
yeah,
need
exactly.
air.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, in a roll cage, if you put in 15 PSI cold, you know, that I could imagine it could increase dramatically with temperature alone. So my point being, what is the accuracy of having that anyway? Because you're not, as the roll cage increases.
I'm sure they figured out the math on it. They're like, yeah. Hey, if we fill the cage with 35 pounds of air in the pit, you know, we know it can go to, you know, 47.
Yeah.
Or if it got cold and it was raining, it's the Le Mans, maybe it drops down to 31. But I think they're sort of like a yellow range, green range,
margin,
red range. Yeah. There's
the whole point is why?
I don't know why. I don't
so
know. I was like, it's a death gauge.
It's
yeah.
Accuracy. It's like, why even have it? Yeah. Matt, why'd you bring it up?
Because he was talking to Jarek Bell. He's like, listen, if that gauge is low and you're in an accident, this cage is going to cave in on you. Like, cause there's a crack somewhere. I mean, it's probably not that cut and dry, but that's how he explained the story. And I thought it was very entertaining.
I could be thinking about this the whole drive back to Tahoe today.
Yeah, I should have pressurized my interior.
I'm so stressed out right now.
All right, I think we're gonna wrap things up.
Come on, we're just getting started.
We are just getting started, but I just wanted to hit this thing. This is I don't know the full story of this thing is crazy. This guy in New Jersey.
Oh God.
Got in his Toyota, I guess his Toyota SUV.
People
cranked
just
up done. Cranked up some
Guns and Roses.
Welcome to the Jungle, Guns and Roses. And drove his SUV into a police station and got out of the car, raised his hands like he was the champion, like king of the world. And he's like, I'm going to park here now. Needless
to say, drugs and alcohol.
Luckily, he did not hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Although he crashed into a desk and a wall and there just wasn't people meeting in there at the time. And cops came out. They kind of looked and they're like, well, I don't understand what's going on. Let's probably arrest this guy. And it's funny because when you read the article, you're like, oh, it's all insane. It's all insane. But then you read like the last thing and you're like, this same guy has already crashed into some other homeowner's garage in an attempt to, I don't know, piss the guy off or intimidate him or something.
It's so his thing.
This is not his. Yeah. Now he's got a thing going. This is his thing. Needless to say, once you add up like harassment, terrorism, battery charges, criminal mischief.
I was just gonna say that's got to be an act of terrorism at this point. Yeah.
Yes. Because of where he hit. Now he is facing life in prison if convicted. He could get life in prison.
Dumbass.
Being a dumbass. Maybe that's what he wanted was to be. Yeah. To be there.
He's like,
I'm curious to see.
Life in prison or homeless.
I mean, there's cameras. You could watch it.
I watched it. Yeah, it's crazy. And yeah. He does. He runs out with his hands up in the air, like, woo!
This cop comes out with his chest all puffed up and he's like, tattoos on him. He's like, What are you doing? I like credit to these guys. These guys were calm.
Yeah.
The cops in there were calm. They're like, we're going to frisk you. We're going to arrest you.
Yeah.
And then we're going to ask, what the hell are you thinking?
Yeah, like, they're going to call
first
our
things first. If you're in there and you hear it and you're the cop that comes out, of course you're thinking, I'm not sure what to arrest you for, but this is definitely an arrestable offense. So let's just get that out of the way.
We're gonna put you in a cell now.
Yeah, and then we're gonna have a conversation. But you could just sit there for a minute in the cell, which I don't know.
Yep.
Probably
part two of this probably goes something like, and the guy ends up naked in the cell, throwing his feces at the wall. I mean, this guy's so out of it.
So
who
out
knows
of it.
Where his head is at, what he's doing, what he's on, what he's been doing, what he's been on. I don't know. That's nuts, man. People have lost their mind. That's it.
Apparently. End of story. All right. End of story. End of story. End of podcast. We're going to wrap things up. As usual, you guys go to shiftedsteer.com is the website. You can find us all on social media. And next week we'll get Bradley underscore Fanshawe back on the show. So
I'm getting a sticker made. I gotta work on that caricature.
Hey, we got some events and stuff coming out. I know we're just at the beginning of October, but I'm gonna be at SEMA. You're gonna be at SEMA. You're gonna have car on display at SEMA. I will not. I just got word. I don't have to bring a car this year, which is fine. It would have been the same car as last year. Actually makes it a little bit easier for me. So
yeah,
I can actually focus on getting the car, having a little fun with it, you know, being able to drive it a little bit. So,
well, it's stressful. I'm going to bring the Jeep. It's going to be on display with Kicker, I believe, outside in the front of Central Hall. I'll be with C-Tech every day, I think around 10:30 or 11. But yeah, it's, I'll also be with Ace, paints Ace Finishes. I'll be with my buddy Mike over there, but yeah, it's really stressful bringing a car. I'm bringing the Jeep as is. I mean, it came off a 10,000 mile trip to Alaska and both expos, Colorado, Arizona, Oregon, and Washington. It's been all over, and British Columbia, Canada, and I'm bringing it as is, cracked windshield and everything. And I'm being authentic. I mean, I'll clean it up a little bit. There's a lot of bugs that are just kind of embedded. So, you know, it won't be perfect, but it'll be authentic, folks. If you want to see it, you're at SEMA, check it out.
Yeah. We'll remind you guys a few more times between now and then. But yeah.
And with any luck, a bear will mar it up a little more, and I'll have that story to tell on top.
Yeah, right. You got to get a photo playing, you know, it's just like a little
four
YouTube video
week,
playing in the background, just bears all the time.
4 days a week. So real quick, I've got a young man, a buddy of mine, who's kind of traveling, and he just wanted a place to camp out. He's from the Ukraine and headed back to Canada soon. And he, so I said, well, just stay at the shop, you know, I'll give you a power plug and, you know, I'll have you on camera for safety. And then like 3 days a week, he's been there for about a week, a couple days this week, I've sent him bear footage and said, yeah, he sniffed your door. How'd that feel? He said, yeah, I heard him in the trash can down the street. He can hear him. He walks past the window and he kind of huffs. He said he can see the steam on the window and the huff, and then he just keeps but he keeps walking. He hasn't disturbed him yet. I'm like, man, thank goodness. I don't want that liability.
Right. Yeah.
Jeez. Bear mauls 20-year-old Ukraine kid in front of Rat Runner's garage.
Oops.
I told you not to take the peanut butter pretzels in the car.
Yeah, you got to be very aware of what you're eating and where you're leaving it.
Very aware. Yes, you do.
Yeah, you got to be very aware. All right, I think that's enough.
All right, folks.
We're out. All right, guys, see you next week.
Racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Fanshawe, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast. Rides, people, and places. With your host, Brad Fanshawe.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.